well, he tried to tie our hobbies, so things like Lego, into the internet, so he'd find little games for us and things like that. So I have some very early memories of playing small internet games that the Lego company was doing back then. That's a very early memory. I think that's probably that from that perspective, yeah.
And that's Alexander Delic, director at Code Development. I'm Julian Duque, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast, and here in the podcast, we share stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we are going to talk with Alex about MaxDAV, a framework for test automation. But before, we will start just as we left off, and we often do, with his early years.
An early experience, I don't know about first experience, but my father was quite early adopter of all things technological. So I think I sort of had the first experiences for my generation with things like internet and Wi-Fi, I would say. I can just about remember dial-up, just about. And so I remember all the noises that used to make. But I also remember early Wi-Fi, and he was always encouraging us to, well, he tried to tie our hobbies, so things like Lego, into the internet. So he'd find little games for us and things like that. So I have some very early memories of playing small internet games that the Lego company was doing back then. That's a very early memory. I think that's probably that from that perspective. Yeah, it's an interesting question.
Yeah, like building Legos online, like there were like a platform to build Legos, or what so, were these games about?
I don't think they had that at that point. This is like early noughties. So what I remember was that sort of in the sort of early 2000s, they had this range of toys that apparently was one of the big contributors to save the company. They weren't doing so well in the 90s. And in the noughties, they released these sort of action figure things called Bionicles.
Oh, yes.
Remember those?
Yeah.
And with Bionicles, they had this whole like sort of story and ecosystem in addition to the toys. So they had little games where you'd explore their world and things like that. So that's what I'm thinking of. A couple of other things here and there as well. But the thing that came to mind when you said that was me as a sort of five-year-old waiting for different chapters of this one game to come out, and that was through the internet. So it's quite impressive what they did, to be honest, with the technology, because this was pre-streaming or fast internet speeds. So yeah, very minimalist, but very effective for what it was.
So and have you ever had the opportunity to play also with Mindstorms?
Mindstorms. Yes, that was back then as well. Are we thinking of the same thing? So this another
noughties. This is the robotics.
Yes, I did. Actually. I remember the little app that it came with. That's probably the earliest experience of programming development.
Now we are getting into the interesting
stuff.
Now we're
getting into it. Yes, so they had this little, you probably remember this, but they had this like yellow control block in the real world. And then they gave you motors and things like that. So I remember creating little catapults and that kind of thing, which we'd fire tissues around the room with. And that was all through that Mindstorms. Man, you've brought back that. That is a memory and a half that you've just brought back to me. Yeah, that's Mindstorms.
That's a good memory. I used to teach programming and robotics.
Oh yeah,
to kids and teenagers using both Arduino, open source robotics kits, and Mindstorms as well. Mm. So this is why I remember those. I have not been a Lego person. I have like a couple of things here, but okay. I have not been like deeply into Lego. But definitely Mindstorms for me was like game changer to teach STEM abilities to teenagers and kids.
Well, I think what's amazing with that sort of side of Lego, they have their like Technic stuff, which is, you know, it's in that sort of physical engineering side of things rather than just blocks building a house. And I think that Mindstorms, at the very least, was a really effective application of that, where you can physically create wheels that make a controllable vehicle, for example. Or, as I say, you can make yourself a very reliably working armature that can, you know, fling tissues around the room, as I just said. You know, it's a good way to like create high quality kind of components for machines that then can be programmed. So I can see why that would be like a game changer for you. Yeah.
It's incredible. Not only engineering, coding skills, it involves a lot. Yeah. That really, really sparks the curiosity for a teenager or a child. That's definitely, amazing definitely. That we had access to these things.
Mm.
How was your transition to, okay, I'm going to be working with code after this, or I'm going to be learning something more advanced than just playing with these blocks?
It is an interesting question. So I'm on the sort of, there's kind of multiple steps to that. I think when I was a teenager, I was given a Raspberry Pi.
Oh, yes.
Sort of late teens. And I created a couple of little applications there. University, I did archaeology, so I wasn't at all involved in the technical side. Yeah, yeah.
That's okay, that's unexpected, but nice.
No, yeah, it's one of those ones where I didn't pursue it and chose a different industry. And then following that, I've been working a lot on, you know, working for the company I work for now, MaxTaf. I do a lot of the website handling and stuff like that. So I have a little bit of a design eye. And it really started there, just being incredibly frustrated that you know how you want a website to look and act and behave, and being frustrated that you can't execute it in the same way you can with your sort of design programs tools. So I think that's where I've sort of picked it up over, you know, five, six years of working, and eventually gone on courses and things like that. But yeah, I think the most exposure I'd say I've had in my life definitely was just through necessity, if that makes sense.
Okay. So very interesting, that jump from archaeology to go directly to the company you are.
Yeah, I think I've always been techie and geeky like that. So it's not like it ever left my mind. I think it was just another thing that I chose to study rather than software itself. Perhaps I didn't want to lose the passion for it.
I love it. And did you ever try to mix those two things, like archaeology with technology? Maybe back in college, did you do like an experiment with those two things, or try to do something?
Do you know, I never found a way to. It depends on what you mean. I mean, like at the moment, archaeology is being hugely aided by technology. I know that, for example, there was a case study that came from my university where they used Google Maps to find archaeological sites, because there's all sorts of, like, you can see like a Roman fort, for example, in the UK, just by looking at it from above, because the grass grows differently depending on the height of the dirt. So if there's walls underneath, then yeah. But I don't think I ever managed to marry the two together in any meaningful way. There was a little bit of statistical programming and things like that, but no, I don't think I ever quite blended those worlds together.
Yeah, but definitely there is a way, always. I think right now, everything needs or has a technological aspect to it.
Yeah.
We have been more and more depending and relying on technology, that we can say that almost any company or any profession can have like a technological component to it.
I think that's true. And I think it, I mean, there's a bunch of things that have contributed to that. Obviously, we're all more used to just technology being in our lives, whereas 20 years ago, things like the internet even were treated with a kind of like, oh, that's cool, let's wait for it to take off kind of attitude. But also just computing power, like you can do so much more with the resources that are more commonly available. You know, previously a supercomputer that would have taken up the size of a room now all fits into a laptop that you can buy for 500 quid online, you know.
Yeah.
It's I think that availability of technology is what means that anyone really who has an idea can get themselves educated, get themselves learning, and eventually implement a solution to a problem.
Yeah, speaking of computing, Raspberry Pi, I remember like the comparison between the first version of Raspberry Pi and the one you have today is it's quite a leap.
Yeah, yeah. And that's just, I can't remember what the law is. There's a, do you know the law, which is like computing power will in some way, shape, or form double, either by being more space efficient or by just general technological leaps. Well, that Raspberry Pi is like the perfect example of something that's just continuing to refine on its idea of just being this tiny little brick with so much power. It's a good like sort of metric, I think, for that.
Yeah, I'm very excited about the near future because we are in this like transition point with both AI and quantum computing that we are leaving pretty much the nascent of these two technologies, how it is impacting our lives.
Yeah.
The next 5 or 10 years are going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, and it's hard to predict where it's going to go. I mean, I know that OpenAI were doing their work for years before ChatGPT became popularized, and even it was available prior to whenever it was last November, really, when it really kicked off. But something about the eventual presentation of it just meant that it took off like wildfire. And who could predict that? It was available before. It wasn't super popular. And all of a sudden, it exploded. And I think what they say is the fastest adopted technology in history or something like that by some science. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing. I don't know, a bit scared as well, to be honest. I'm glad that various governments around the world are taking the speed at which the adoption's happening and the change in all of our habits very, very seriously, because that hasn't always happened with technological changes.
Yeah. Well, similar to cloud and software as a service, everything, it like the whole computing concept change, dealing with licenses, dealing with installing things in my computer. Now everything is available on a cloud. And
yeah,
I think this is a great way to start talking about MacStaff.
Oh, yes.
Can you tell us what that is and what can I do with it?
Okay, yes. So MacStaff is a platform that simply put helps with automated testing. So we have a number of different industries that we work with. Originally, we came from the enterprise asset management world through an IBM product called Maximo. We helped very configurable, similar to Salesforce, very configurable application, and is configured to meet sort of organizational business needs. And wherever there's configuration, there's a requirement for testing. And where automated testing and where we come in is really when the burden of testing, you have your configurations, you have, and they're often very, very specialized knowledge. You know, the people who can test are often very, very few within an organization. Automated testing can help capture that knowledge, that workflow knowledge, that expected behavior knowledge, and then help make those tests a lot more repeatable, a lot more reliable, a lot less prone to human error. So yeah, we support automated testing for a number of places, including Salesforce.
Ooh.
Where did that come from? Well, recently, Salesforce themselves invested into automated testing. A little bit of history for you, Julian, is that Salesforce has typically and historically been really difficult to do automated testing for.
Yeah.
And so you've had a couple of specialist vendors who've been fantastic at creating solutions. But the reason why is that because of the regular release cycle and specific things to do with the architecture of Salesforce, every single time Salesforce pushes a release, the UI, all of the sort of IDs and identifiers and things like that change, and that will break automated tests. So that means that, yes, you can put some effort into creating a test script, let's say, but then as soon as there's a change rolled out by the organization, that script might break. You need to go in and either fix it or even, at the worst case scenario, recreate it. So recently, Salesforce have created this technology that allows them to create these reusable components that the Salesforce organization will be continuously updating and maintaining. And then you can use those components in your test scripts. So when a new Salesforce release happens, those components are updated at the same time. Those changes get rolled out to your test scripts. And that basically means these tests are much, much easier to maintain and work with. And what we've done is we've implemented and integrated that technology into our SaaS platform, MaxTaf, which is a sort of test automation management tool.
That's great. I mean, testing business logic, doing unit testing, even integration testing for me is super important, and it can be a simple task, but UI testing for me is black magic. It's super difficult because how can I tell a framework or a library that something needs to look a certain specific way, how to take into account different browsers. And I am not a graphical person. You mentioned before that you were a kind of like a design-oriented person, and you started this out of necessity. But for me, it's really, really difficult. So help me understand a little bit how that's done, how these tools helps with the UI testing.
So when it comes to UI testing, I mean, as a developer, you probably get involved with a unit testing. Quite a bit. And unit testing is obviously testing blocks of code to make sure those are working. But once it gets into a certain ready state, let's call it, you're ready to release, you need to go back through and do what's called regression testing. And regression testing is really testing the system as is to make sure it's working as expected. And that can only really be done trustworthily, let's say, through the UI. So you either, and what we're talking about here is validating your standard things, making sure that your layouts are as expected, all the elements are present, that if there are any read-only fields, that they are read-only, that the business logic is correct, that the workflows are, you know, implementing the requirements needed. Anything that can be easily validated through clicking by a human. So what we're talking about with regression testing, though, is that a human needs to do it, typically. As I say, the alternative path is automated UI testing. And that human typically needs to have a hell of a lot of specialized knowledge. They need to have a plan. They need to have a structure. And then when they're executing the testing, they're making sure they're going through their workflows. They need to be very, very sort of rigorous in their note-taking and making sure that all the validations are there, that they're not skipping over anything. And you know, I'm sure you found this in the experience that if there's a deadline coming, that can often be skipped over. That can often be, shortcuts can be taken in that area.
Yeah, of course.
And that almost defeats the whole purpose of regression testing, which is what we're looking for, is checking that, yes, the functionality is working as expected, but that we also haven't broken other aspects of the application as well, which we're not expecting. So if you've made some configuration at a very deep level of Salesforce, let's say, you may well have broken another area of the application of the platform. And that's not something that you're going to be easily able to sort of eyeball. You have to just go through a strict list of 50, 100, 200 test cases. You've got to cast your net and make sure we're trying to catch what these are, which is regressions. And that's what we're doing. We're doing regression testing. Now you start to see the picture of why automated testing can be so important, because that is just hours in the day. And it's hours by often very specialized resources whose main responsibility isn't necessarily testing. So yeah.
Nice. And is this only exclusively for Salesforce applications, or do you support other platforms?
Yeah, so I already mentioned something which we've got a lot of support for, which is where we originally came from, Maximo. But actually, no, our technology is and the Salesforce technology, both of them are actually technology agnostic.
Oh, nice.
So to sort of, without getting into far too much technical detail, I mentioned these components that Salesforce are maintaining and updating. Well, the technology that they've created allows them to create new components. And you can do that for any application whatsoever. It's a little bit more effort than it comes to with testing with the Salesforce. I should give them a name, by the way. What they're called is page objects. It's a strategy that's used to technically map out the user interface of a system and then be able to sort of use components that can identify those page objects. So yeah, Salesforce have done all of that on their end, but you can use their technology to do it for any system, for any application. And so we support both the page objects, we support their technology, but also we have a number of other testing technologies as well that are appropriate in different situations. Some of them are very high programming languages. to Java programming, that kind of thing. Some of them make your life a little bit easier, but we're trying to give a little bit of flexibility so that as many people can sort of get involved with automated testing as possible.
Awesome. And I'm seeing here that pretty much you are supported by open source technologies. What technologies are you using on this product?
So architecturally, we've got in terms of the testing stuff. So the biggest tool in the test automation world is called Selenium, which you may have come across once or twice in the past. That is a test automation technology. It is effectively, you feed it with code, can be in many different languages, and you tell it to click on the screen or type. So that's one thing. The Salesforce technology, it's called UTAM. That's open source as well. It's an open source project from Salesforce. In addition to that, we are currently implementing a Microsoft-produced technology, I believe, called Playwright, which has certain advantages in certain areas. And then outside of that, we've got a bunch of frameworks. We've got a graphical reporting framework called Allure, and that gives you a hell of a lot of information once you've executed all of your test runs, which can happen through our application. You get a lot of information, timelines, details. Did the test pass? Did the test not pass? Or did the test break? Which is one of the big challenges in automated testing. So that Allure is open source. We manage our test execution through a grid system, which is used for distribution of sort of server nodes, called Selenoid. That's again open source. So yeah, I mean, really, one of our big sort of things that we're really proud of is that whereas teams may get to the functionality that we've sort of provided with a lot of hard work using these technologies, we've really put it together and made it as like sort of easy to use and streamlined and as accessible as possible so that people can benefit from these open source technologies without having to worry about installing and maintaining and everything else.
Yeah, and I don't need to relearn a different technology as well. If I already do UI testing with Selenium, I can use Mac stuff without any issues.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, that's really, it's definitely would be a good way to learn something like Selenium for sure. So if there are any budding test automation engineers out there, that's definitely a way to do it.
Nice. So this is for web UI. Does it also support mobile applications?
The UTAM technology doesn't. We can. It's a different ball game with mobile because you end up, the real challenge with mobile testing is having either emulation or the physical devices that can allow you to test on all different screen sizes, operating systems, and so on. If you want to test Apple products, for example, you literally physically need an Apple device because they don't let you emulate their software. And there are services out there which provide that. And as I say, that's the biggest challenge. Definitely are some scripting challenges as well. But yeah, I'd say you're looking at services. I can name a couple: Source Labs, BrowserStack. They all have big farms of devices that can enable that emulation across many, many different browsers. That would be the sort of service you're looking for mobile testing. The main challenge of mobile testing. From a scripting perspective, there are open source technologies as well. Appium is the major one, and I think there are a couple of others which don't come to mind at the moment.
Got it. So now you know, folks that are listening right now, if you want to give it a try to automate your tests using UTAM for your Salesforce applications, you can give MacStaff a try.
Yeah.
And we will definitely share resources on the show notes. Yeah. So Alex, at the end, you will give me all of the different resources, blog posts, videos, and anything that you want us to share with our audience.
Absolutely.
Do you have anything else to say about this amazing product to whoever is listening to us?
Yeah, I suppose if I were to just drive home the main message is that if you're thinking of adopting test automation and not sure where to start, or if you're at the other end of things, you're very deep into test automation, you're finding it to be inefficient or a pain, because test automation can be a pain just as much as testing, then much like Salesforce, it's really about, you know, taking your requirements to the cloud. We don't need to think about tooling, don't need to think about maintenance. Everything is there for you. Maintenance and support is on us. Technology upgrades and improvement is on us. And yeah, it's end-to-end test automation, scripting, operations, scheduling, reporting, execution, everything handled all within one app.
This is beautiful. Alex, while you are not building these test automation tools, what do you usually do for fun? What is one hobby of yours?
Well, I can think of a recent hobby. I recently completed a jigsaw puzzle that was 6,000 pieces.
6,000 pieces? That's a lot of patience for me.
It was a lot of patience. Well, I enjoy it. It's good fun. Like, it's there's a certain, it's not for everyone, but there's a certain, I don't know, dopamine cycle that comes with placing a piece and going, yeah, and then going for the next one. And there's a lot of satisfaction. Would I do a 6,000 piece puzzle again? I'm not sure. It was so big, I had to do it on the floor. And so I was stooping over a lot. So I've got a lot of aches and pains, which I'm still working off. But yeah, that was a recent thing. Otherwise, I'm always up to different hobbies this year, a variety of things. Earlier on this year, I got into making cocktails at home.
Making cocktails. Sounds delicious.
Yeah. That was the winter hobby. And then the sort of spring hobby, I think we got into planting some plants. So I was given a kit, a cocktail garnish plant kit. And I thought, I train my green finger. So I did a bit of that as well. And some of them have survived. So I'm quite happy.
That's good. I don't have that skill. So
no. Well,
at this household, we don't plant anything.
There are definitely high maintenance and low maintenance plants, as I've learned. Cactus is a low maintenance plant, whereas basil or something, which is what I've been growing here, I'm just looking at it now, that complains a lot if it doesn't get its fair share of water. So yeah, there's entry level planting as well.
And that's it. If you want to learn more about this show, head on to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear all the episodes and read the show notes. Thank you, everybody, and talk to you the next time.